You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, Cardinal fans. I'm Ozzie Smith.
Corks one into right down the line. It may go.
And you're listening to the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
Here's your host, Brent McMillan.
Hello and welcome to the Cardinals Insider Podcast. Glad to have you with us. I'm Brent McMillan. This episode, we continue with a series of sit-down interviews Ozzie Smith conducted on opening day. This particular one, a conversation between Ozzie and Willie McGee. I've been fortunate enough to see these two together behind the scenes this year, and it really is a genuine friendship that they have. In fact, you're going to hear it in their voices as the interview unfolds. Both players making a tremendous impact in St. Louis.
The ball goes to the wall. Two runs score. McGee may circle the bases. They bring him around third base. He's trying to score. The throw home. He is safe.
Here's a pitch to Ozzie. He bunts.
Oh, beauty.
And there goes the runner to third. The play to first. Safe. The ball gets away. Here's the runner trying to score. He is safe. And the Cardinals have won.
Between them, they share 19 All-Star appearances, 16 Gold Gloves, a pair of Silver Sluggers, and of course, they won 3 NL pennants and a World Championship as well. It's a great conversation, and we're pleased to bring it to you, Ozzie and Willie, on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
We've had some wonderful times and stuff together. Tell us what you do. What are you doing now? What consists of?
I can't call it working, but I'm employed. I'm employed by the Cardinals.
Okay. What does that mean?
So I go. You know, I just travel, going to the different minor league cities and helping. You know, helping with the younger guys with the, you know, mental aspects of the game. And I don't do too much with hitting and the mechanical things because I'm only there for a week. So they have coaches there that's there year round that's teaching the kids, you know, what they want to teach them. So the part I enjoy is being in the dugout during the games and the kids start to come up to you and ask you questions about what did you do, what do you think it takes, about routines, you know, and you can see little things about base running that I can tell them about, you know, and stuff like that.
So you enjoy that?
I enjoy the teaching part, and then I'm learning also, you know, from the more experienced coaches that's there, you know. But
now how long you been doing this?
I think about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think about 4 years.
You have any aspirations to?
Nah, I don't.
To go any further?
I don't. I'm day to day. You know, so what? I might wake up tomorrow and say that's enough. I might wake up tomorrow.
As only Willie can say. I don't know.
I might wake up tomorrow and you know you want to manage in a minor league, not in the big leagues. Or a little league, a college or something. You know, because I did it in little league. I coached girls softball, and you know the fun part of that to me is taking a team. And not worrying about winning, but just getting that team to be the best they can be. Any ways that they can be beat or not be beat, whether it's catching the ball, then we're going to work on that till they catch the ball. You know, if it then we add a little bit to that. But that's the fun part of it I like, is just getting the team to be the best they can be and not being able to beat in any way they can be beat.
Yeah. Let me ask you, if they came to you tomorrow and said, hey, we'd like to invite you to coach at the big league level. Would that interest you?
Nah, not right now. Not right now. Because we spend so much time on the road and away from home. And, you know, and at this point, I'm just not, I just don't want to do the traveling and don't want to be in that extreme light. I'd just rather do what I'm doing, you know, until I can't do it. You know, we had a good mentor in Dave Ricketts, you know, and George Kissel was there for a while. I got to spend a couple years around George, you know, but Dave Ricketts was the guy that taught me really, you know, a lot of good things about the mental game, how to keep it simple, you know, how to work, how not to work. So I take a lot of that stuff I learned from him. And now Kendo's down there. And
I was going to ask you, who now fills that void of Dave Ricketts or and George Kitzel?
This guy, man, Okendo, he's wonderful, man. I'm glad he's down there because now, you know, he's more aggressive than I am. And he'll take guys and he'll go, Willie, let's go. And we'll go over to one field and get the outfielders, Willie, get the, you know, boom, boom, boom. And he takes the infield. So it's, you know, so I'm learning. I'm learning, also learning from him. You know, and getting comfortable, and he's helping a lot of those kids. And you got Louis Aguayo, you got Pops over there.
Louis Aguayo, played
with the Phillies.
With the Phillies 15 years. Good infielder, great hands.
And you got Mark DeJohn. You just got so much experience over there. You know, Mark been around for a long time, and so he's down there, and he's got a world of knowledge. So it's just a fun experience. So, you know, playing was one thing. You know, because you play for 20 years, 15, 20 years, it's a whole different game coaching. Now I'm learning to coach. You know, I've realized that, hey, man, I got to come in here. You know, now I got to learn how to take what I've experienced and learn how to apply it. So it's just like a whole nother. So I feel like I'm in AA right now as far as coaching goes, you know, learning how to do that part of it.
How much different is it in the minor leagues than it was in the big leagues? You know, I know that. You know, we had traveling secretaries and stuff, and we didn't have to worry about anything. We didn't have to grab our own luggage. Are you grabbing your own luggage these days?
Yeah, it's a little different, man.
Are you sitting your own skin?
That I don't have to do. So I'm a little fortunate there. So I can call, you know, either Linda over here, Mozeliak's secretary, or I can call Tony, who's over the minor league deal. So you got two ways to go. And they usually make, you know, set up your room, set up your car, you know, your flight arrangements. And it makes it a lot easier. And I let them know I'm very appreciative of it.
So you're still big leaguing it?
No, not really. No, it ain't nothing like big league. Cause, I'm sitting in coach.
Okay, you're in coach.
I'm in coach.
All right.
I'm in coach. I eat when I get off that one plane and get on the next plane.
Oh, and now eating. You probably still eat big steak. Come on, Will. I know you eat big steak. You eat steak every night.
No, man. I try to stay away because it piles up quick. You know, back then we could run it off in a day. We ran it off in a day, but now it just, man, it's hanging around a little bit longer now. It ain't as easy to shake it off, man.
How are you health-wise?
Doing well that I know of, you know, doing well that I know of.
Did you have, you had some
I had my hip
light surgery?
Yeah, I had a thing called resurfacing on my left hip. And it's been 4 months out, man, and I'm feeling really good. I'm glad I did it. You know, I didn't wait till it got too bad, you know. Some fellas tell me they couldn't even sleep, so I didn't want it to get to that point. But now, man, I feel like, I don't feel like running, but I can...
So now would be a good time for me to take you on a golf course?
No, not yet. I ain't played in 4 or 5 months,
that's a
man.
Perfect time now.
And I know how you are. No mercy. You don't act like, man, come on, man.
That's great to know. How's your family?
Everybody's doing well.
How many girls?
I got four, cuz. My oldest, she has four kids. She's doing well. She's going back to school. My youngest daughter, she just graduated from St. Mary's College, so she's looking for, you know, in business. She's looking to get employed. My middle daughter, she draws blood, so she's doing temporary work here and there. She's looking for a permanent, you know, permanent job. And then Whitney, who's here also, she just had a baby, so she's got two kids. So that's where my life is now. You know, I got
grandkids.
Seven, eight grandkids, and that's what I do. You know, I'm almost like another dad to them, and make sure that the older ones get what they're supposed to get, so they can teach the younger ones when I'm there. So I don't go to the college and do a lot of that stuff no more. Transitioning to that aspect of life.
Now you do have a son in your life now too, as
well. I do.
Tell us about how he's coming along. I know he had some aspirations to sport wise.
I think it was more me.
More you than.
He's a funny kid, man. He'll be 15 in April, and he'll work his butt off. You know, if you ask him to. So I asked him if he wanted to play basketball this year, and he doesn't want to play. You know, we're playing competitive, and he does pretty good, you know, just to keep him busy. So, you know, but I'm not going to force him. You know, he didn't want to play baseball no more. No problem. You don't have to do it. You know, so he's here with us, and, you know, he's just a good kid, man. All you want in life is just for your kids to be able to take care of themselves socially and financially, you know, and hopefully, you know, we find a niche for him to, you know, something he likes besides sports, because he doesn't have a passion that we had. You know, my kid didn't have the passion that I have. So, and you know, in this game, baseball and sports, you have to, if you don't have that passion, as you get older, it's going to eat you up.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you know, we spent some wonderful years together, and Whitey Herzog brought us both over here. And I don't know if my life would have been the same had that trade never happened. How do you feel about the transition of coming from the Yankees, from the backfields of the Yankees at the time, I believe, in 82, and becoming a part of this Cardinal organization?
Oh, it was great, man. It was a perfect fit for my style of play. As you say, yeah. I mean, just a, you know, and Whitey was a perfect person for that style of play. You know, as I tell people, once the game started, it was like Little League. You just go out there and play. You know, we didn't have the clocks at first base, you know, giving us times of the pitcher. You know, as soon as we got to the base, we're over there thinking about how we're going to get to second and get that jump. So it was just a simple game. And, you know, what he had, two requests, show up on time and run hard, you know. And then he trusted his players. You know, we had yourself, we had Tommy Herr, who were like coaches on the field, you know, who kept us together. Hopefully, you didn't have to do too much, you know, for me out there, you know what I'm saying? Just every now and then, Will, wake up.
Man,
you know, every now and then.
Man, sometimes I felt like I had to coach shortstop and center field. You know, you and Vince out there sleep. But no, it was, you know, those were great times. And like you say, you know, we pretty much coached ourselves. And there were very few times that I can remember where Whitey said, you know, we had to have a meeting about us not doing what we were supposed to do, you know, whether it was running the bases or whatever. So coming here and playing was one of the easiest things in the world. And I've always said that if you can't play under the conditions that we had, be on time and give 100%. And if we were on time and we gave 100%, we didn't hear much from Whitey at all.
No.
You know, you put your name in the lineup every day and you were able to go out and do your job. And that's all you want to do as a professional player, is be able to go out and do your job without any restrictions. Mm-hmm. And we certainly had that in the 80s, and I think that was part of the excitement of Cardinal baseball.
Yes, that's true. And you know, you didn't know Whitey was there really until you lost perspective of what you were there for. You know, you got a little selfish or, you know, a little disinterested in what you were there for. And then that's when Whitey would say something. But he didn't do much talking either. I recall a couple of situations where, you know, you just, next thing you know, that guy's gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Got to step it up.
Yeah, we got to play.
But no, I think he was also very good in putting a group of people together, which I think is one of the assets of a great manager, a great coach, is to be able to blend personalities so that everybody is going in the same direction. Everybody pretty much knew what their role was, and you worked at being the very best that you could, to the best of your ability. And if you did that, then good things happened. And
yeah.
They certainly did for us in the 80s.
And all around, I mean, we took pride in developing an all-around games, you know, defense. I love defense more than I did base stealing. I love hitting more than I did base stealing. And then we just add the other little things, the bunting, handling the bat, moving runners over. I mean, we put in the work, you know, it's kind of a different game now. You know, it's kind of a pitching and hitting, you know, and not hitting this away, but hitting the long way, you know, and it's interesting to see how that's going to turn out in a few years, you know, the way they're going with the analytics and stuff. And you have to embrace it, you know, because these guys are well-educated guys that's coming in with these thoughts, and they make a lot of decisions based on that. And I guess you just got to step back and give it a chance to.
Well, we as players, though, analytics never really played a big part in the way we went about it, because the bottom line is that I got to catch it, I got to throw it, I got to hit it, and I got to run. And I feel that if we do those things more consistently than everybody else, then those analytics take care of themselves. If you're doing your job every day and playing center field and getting on and stealing bases, I mean, those were stopping that other team from doing it. And if you're a team that catch and throw on a more consistently than the opposition, then you have a better chance of winning.
I agree 100%. And then, you know, even back then we were using it, but we didn't know. Like Whitey would have those charts, you know, where he'd have, you get 50, 60 at bats, you have a chart, and you can just about set up your defense to that, you know. And then we know as players, defensive players, we watch the guys hit, watch their swing that day, who's pitching, and we set ourselves up a little bit off of that defense.
You know, one of the important things that people don't talk about much is that we watch the other team take batting practice.
That's all.
Yeah, you watch the other team take batting practice, and then you get an idea. So it was about gathering as much information as you could, but it was never one of those things that was stated that, hey, you should go out and do this. This was what we did as a team. We had an understanding of it, and we knew that if we were better prepared than the other team, we had a better chance of winning. And that's really what it was all about. Yeah.
You say that, and I tell them, I'm telling these kids that every day down there, you know. Matter of fact, I had three or four of the young pitchers come up to me, you know, not many of them do, but they're talking to me about what bothered me as a base stealer. Like you say, we watch batting practice of the other team. We watch the pitcher warm up, the opposing pitcher, if we could, to see what he was doing, see if his breaking ball, if he going to the stretch, see if we can pick up something. And, you know, we ain't watching him all day, but just to kind of see if you can get that little edge. You know, we watch the catchers. You know, we watching the defense, seeing if they have holes. And you tell these kids that, and it's like they never heard it to a point, you know, which they probably have. But hearing it from two or three people, and then I tell them, don't only talk to me, talk to some of these other big league guys that's around here. And if you got two or three people telling you the sun is shining outside and their character is good and they're in their right mind, then I'm just about believing it's going to be sunshine outside.
When you look back at your career, what were the highlights?
The consistency, the 82 World Series was just, I mean, that was, nothing ever topped that. I mean, you do that, it was probably your second or third year?
It was my first year here, but I can remember, the first game in the World Series in 1982? They beat us 11 to nothing, and we were riding home.
Yeah, man.
And I said, we got our work cut out for us, and I said, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to find a way to beat these guys.
You
remember that?
I remember those balloons. We got on a bus, and I remember all these balloons going off.
Yeah.
Blue and yellow balloons, like it was over.
Milwaukee.
Yeah. And another thing that you said that was, it scared the mess out of me then, but you said, hey, Willie, I don't care what you do during the regular season, this is what they're going to remember you by. But you know what countered that fear was preparation, because we did our bunting. We did our base running every day. We did our defensive work every day. We did our hitting. And that there, I had to, right then, I start thinking, I'm saying, hey, I'm prepared. So if something happens and it happens like that, it just wasn't meant to be. But it wasn't because we weren't prepared.
And that was a big part of the success that we had in the 80s.
I tell these kids that every day, man. You don't want to get up there to the big leagues and be put in a pinch run or something, pinch hit, and you can't get the bunt down, or you get picked off in a crucial situation, not knowing where your outfielders are, not scoring on. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And that's the little stuff that I try to get them to pay attention to, you know. But and hopefully you can get the coaches to do the same thing when them kids go to their different cities.
Right. Which, you're hoping that message is the message that is being relayed to the kids every day, because the more that they hear that, the more it becomes a part of their everyday life.
The importance of it in the big games, in the big games, the importance of it, not just this, not just pitching, it's the little things that's going to get you,
keep you there. Well, you know, looking back on both of our careers, I know that you took a lot of pride. Let's talk about one of the funny things. Mm-hmm. You took a lot of pride in, we talked about defense and the pride. Now, here recently, you had something brought back to you. Mm-hmm. You remember what that was? You remember, you had, there was one day we had out on the field. You had a bad day. Let's just put it
I had a bad few months.
Well, you had a bad day. You had a bad day, but somebody brought something back to you. Tell me, what did they bring back to you?
They brought back a glove. Gloves that I didn't care if I ever saw it again.
That was the glove you flipped in the stands. Yeah.
And the story behind that was, in spring training, all of a sudden, in the middle of spring training, I had this glove been using for a year or two, and I used the biggest glove I can find, you know. I used the biggest glove I can find. All of a sudden, they changed the rule halfway through spring training that you can only use a 12-inch glove in the outfield.
And you were used to what, 16?
13. 13. I think the biggest was 13.
Oh, okay. Oh.
And that makes a big difference, man. And then the Rawlings gloves at the time, we didn't have 8 different companies with gloves. So the Rawlings glove, the leather was good quality, but it was stiff. And it took a while to break in, and I just never got comfortable. And that ball would be hit in a right center field gap every time. And the last 10 feet of that ball traveling, it just seemed like slow motion, and it just always hit right on the palm of my hand. Yeah. So I knew then I just gave up. But I didn't stop hitting because I was a free agent. I said, okay, I can't catch it, but I'm going to hit.
Yeah.
So I came into the dugout. I came in. I just didn't know it. I was just so frustrated. I just flipped it up to the stands, and somebody brought it down to the locker room for me to sign. And I told them, if I ever see that glove again, I'm going to burn it. I'm going to do something with it, but they ain't going to know where it is. And then, so last year in an autograph thing, they brung it back.
You had an autograph session.
And this
was one of the pieces that they brought for you to sign?
They brought back the glove, yeah. So I just laughed. It was funny to see it again.
Mm-hmm. Brought back some memories.
Yeah. But that's, you are who you are, and that's what right. I've learned. I can't be Ozzie Smith. I can't be Bob Gibson. I can't be Red Shandy. You have to be at peace with who you are. And I got to that point as I played more.
You remember the commercial we did? It was a promotion for selling Cardinal tickets.
Tickets.
You remember that? Walter and
Henry.
And Henry and Walter. Who were you, Walter or Henry?
I can't even remember. I can't remember where I was yesterday.
We had a lot of fun with that, and I think that I don't know that if people really knew, if you just put it on, and maybe we can find that in the archives somewhere, of where. We were dressed up as two old guys in the barbershop who were just talking Cardinal baseball. And I had a lot of fun with that, and hopefully we may be able to revive that. Yeah. Would you be willing to do that?
I would. That was fun. I mean, it was fun.
That took you out of character.
Yes. But it was fun. But yes. I had a hard time. That was something that was hard for me, but I enjoyed it. It was fun. At that time, it was fun.
That was great.
You remember going into the locker room and this playing on the screen? Nobody knew.
That was amazing. That was amazing. So hopefully we'll get a chance to at some point in time during the show, we'll talk about that, and we'll revive Walter and Henry.
Yeah, we just have to run a little thing before or after it that this is not meant to offend anybody.
A disclaimer, okay. It's just two guys having fun.
Well, that's all.
Well, it was a pleasure playing with you. Thank you for doing this.
No doubt.
All right.
No doubt. Anytime.
What a conversation between two all-time great Cardinals. Ozzie also chatting with Bob Gibson on opening day. That'll be featured in the coming weeks here on the podcast. Plus, a week ago, we had Bill DeWitt III on. He talked about the beginning of the franchise with us. To make sure you don't miss those or any of our podcasts, you can listen or subscribe. Simply visit cardinals.com/podcast, or you can check us out on iTunes as well. Today's interview originally airing on our Cardinals Insider TV show. We go behind the scenes with the Redbirds every week on 20 different stations throughout Cardinal Nation. To find out where you can watch it near you, check out local listings at cardinals.com/insider. Of course, full episodes and individual stories from the show also available on the MLB At-Bat app. Go to the video section and type in Cardinals Insider in the search bar. That's it for today's podcast. For Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee, I'm Brett McMillan. We'll talk to you next time on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.